those individuals who lack truth in their relationships will ultimately lack the relationship. Those individuals who find truth in their relationship will save that relationship. Unfortunately, in most situations, we are seeking the truth about the other individual in these relationships, which won't help you one iota. Because you see, you can't do anything about changing the faults of that individual, no matter how well you know them. In the final analysis, the only thing you can do is effectuate a change in yourself, and you can't do that if you don't know what's wrong with you. And you don't know what's wrong with you because you're too preoccupied with what's right with you. And what's right with you isn't what's hurting you. So you see, we all kind of get clouded in our minds, and we're looking everywhere but where we should for the peace and happiness that's right in front of you all the time. We will seek out of the Word now in the rendition of Noah and the Ark and the Flood and what brought it up, and relate that to everyday relationships so that you'll know what's wrong with yours. Now, when I say you'll know what's wrong with your relationships, I'm not implying that there's nothing right with them. I'm just not here to preach to you about what's right with you. You already know that. I think the time will be better spent if we skip over what's right about you, which you're the expert on anyway, and let's dwell on those things that aren't right with you so that you can come out of here better than you came in. And then I will have done my job, and you will have done yours. In the sixth chapter of the book of Genesis, we start with verse 5. I will read four verses and then explain them. Verse 5 says, "And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." As we saw in the last messages, there was a lot of wickedness in the earth. Still is, by the way. Now, if wickedness as we see wickedness was reason to flood the earth, then we'd have another flood on our hands, wouldn't we? Verse 13 tells us about a man that God deals with him, but it tells more specifically what happens because of the wickedness. In other words, in every relationship in this room, if every individual in this room, I'm going to prove to you where your wickedness lies. And then verse 13 tells you what the result of your wickedness is. "And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth." In other words, in your relationships, violence will become a part of the relationship through wickedness. Your relationships will be filled with violence, and it comes through wickedness. It doesn't come through your bad temper that you learned or that whatever the other individual did wrong. It becomes because of your wickedness. In other words, a person with wickedness is destined to turn to violence to resolve whatever conflicts there are in his or her relationship. Sometimes violence can take a very subtle form, like killing yourself with food or depression or anger, or frustration, or stress, or all of the other subtle ways that we as individuals who consider ourselves nonviolent, in fact, do violence to ourselves. The word violence comes from the word violate. And the individual who is smoking and filling their lungs with those pollutants to get the high off of the nicotine is violating their lungs. They're violating their body. They're doing violence to themselves. The individual who lives in depression because people around you won't act the way you want them to act, and then worries themselves and depresses themselves into a headache, is doing violence to themselves. So you see, wickedness will always cause you to do violence. Whatever violence there is in your life, it'll come through wickedness. Now, skipping back and jumping back to verse 8, we'll find that there's a solution to this. "Of all the people on the earth, one man found a way around violence." It says, "But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord." Now, Noah was a special individual, not because he was perfect, not because he wasn't a sinner, because we all are, but because he found grace. And I suspect that he found grace because he was looking for grace. You see, it doesn't say God smacked him in the face with grace and gave everybody else a flood. It said Noah found grace. So in the final analysis, what this really boils down to is whatever you have is what you were looking for. So you see, Noah was a different individual. He was looking for something. He was aware of his wickedness. And he was trying to find grace and mercy. He was willing to admit that he was wrong. Now, all these other wicked individuals were willing to admit that everybody else was wrong and causing them to act wickedly and do violence. They weren't looking for grace. They were looking for justice, and they found it. They went for a long swim. Now, you can see that wickedness will motivate an individual to do violence. Conversely, grace has a totally different effect on a human being. And you will find that in verse 9. This Noah that found grace is now explained. It says, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man, and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. Now, if you think that that means that Noah spent all his time reading and praying and supplicating toward heaven, was perfect and never did anything wrong, and walked with God, as we think of the term walk, you can readily see why I am up here and you are down there. Has nothing to do with your preoccupied and preconceived notions of what these words mean. But you will know in a minute. Suffice to say that there was two classes of individuals. Those who were wicked and therefore filled their lives with violence through wickedness. And then there was that individual who found grace in the eyes of the Lord, became a just man, perfect in his generations, and walked with God. Now, those of you ladies that are married, you'll find out that if you have a Noah, you will have a just man who is perfect in his generations and one who walks with God. I didn't say the man wasn't a sinner. I didn't say he didn't have faults. And I didn't say he didn't get on your nerves now and then. I said he was a just man, perfect in his generations, and he walked with God. Again, you don't know even what you're listening to, much less what you're talking about. Just sit there and don't preach the message. Let me finish, and then you can make your decision. First of all, we need to go back and kind of review what this wickedness things mean. Lest we get off in our minds and start thinking about dinner because we don't consider ourselves wicked. The word wicked, if you remember, or wickedness, from the Hebrew, had several definitions of which we touched in great detail. And I'm just going to skim over them this time. The wickedness of man that this was talking about, the first definition was displeasure. A feeling of annoyance, discomfort, sorrow, and dissatisfaction. I'm going to give you a little marriage seminar here. I'm going to share with you how you can pick a husband or a wife, or how you can know if you're raising your children right, or how you can know if your relationship with your parents are right. Whenever you see an individual that's always annoyed at everything, or even annoyed at some things, visibly annoyed to the point that it changes their behavior, they're in sorrow or dissatisfaction, they're always complaining about something, you've got a wicked person on your hands. And that wicked person is going to be the vehicle or the vessel through which violence comes in to your life. So see, this is the first thing to look at. It's an individual who cannot be pleased except by outside and external circumstances and influences. You get hooked up with someone like that, you'll spend the rest of your life trying to alter his or her circumstances to please him, and it's impossible. No matter what you do for him, he'll find something wrong because he has a need to vent his displeasure. As a matter of fact, an individual like that, the more you cater to them, the more you shut down their ways to vent this displeasure, the madder they get at you. Because then they have to start grasping at straws and venting this displeasure for reasons that they can't really justify, and you become the enemy because you're trying to satisfy them. You doom yourself in such a relationship. And the individual who shows the same kind of dissatisfaction toward the Lord in everything, I'm not going to be happy, I'm not going to be a Christian, I'm not going to believe this until this or that happens, you're in the same boat. God's not going to go along with that. You're going to have to learn to be happy right where you're at and then watch your circumstances change. See, you have to change before your circumstances do. Now, the individual who goes to displeasure goes to the next definition, distress. And if you remember, distress meant to exhaust or weaken oneself with strain. This is the beginning of the, not tonight, I've got a headache syndrome. You see, this individual is so displeased with everything that they physically do get strained and exhausted. The other partner erroneously then thinks, she doesn't love me anymore, or he doesn't love me anymore, when the fact of the matter is there's some displeasure going on. Distress, this displeasure leads to distress, which then leads to grief, which is intense emotional suffering. That's the point in your life when there are starting to be some physical and visual manifestation of your wickedness. Notice in all of this, we haven't talked about drinking, smoking, carousing, or any of those physical things that we thought were wickedness. No, those are the wages of sin. Here's what we're talking about. It's what causes the thing in the first place. You're not satisfied with anything. Grief will lead you to misery, and if you remember, misery came from the word miser. And a miser is a wretched, unhappy person who can't enjoy anything they have. No matter what you give them, no matter what they acquire, they put it away and look for it because they're more interested in being miserable than enjoying what they have. So you see, you cannot, there's not enough money in the world to make a miser happy. There's not enough of anything in the world to make a miser happy. So I've learned, don't try to make them happy. They're happy when they're unhappy. Now, if a miser is happy when they're unhappy and I'm happy when I'm happy, then we're both happy. Why am I going to mess with their happiness? You see, all you're going to do is you're going to make that individual unhappy with their unhappiness. And they would rather be happy with their unhappiness. You cannot change an individual like that. Now, they can be changed. I didn't say they couldn't be changed. I said you can't change them. Misery will lead you to noisome. And again, remember, these things are the manifestations of what God is calling wicked. See, we kind of take away the shield that we've had about our defining for ourselves what wickedness is. And let me tell you something. The drunk never defines drunkenness as wicked. Your sin is never wicked. It's the other guy's. Well, you see, the Lord is saying here, it's not what you do. It's how what you do affects you that's the wickedness. Misery will lead you to being noisome. And noisome means harmful to health. And that is foul-smelling and stinking. Sounds like cigarettes and alcohol and beer breath and all those things that we thought was the wickedness. It's how it affects you that it's wicked. It's the effect that you want from that that's wicked. Now, it amazes me that people will spend millions, billions of dollars in this country for things to make our breath smell better the day after, but the night before you spend billions to make it smell worse. I want some beer and some nuts. What a combination. That'll give you a breath, it'll knock a horse over at 20 paces. But then you'll go and spend more money to make yourself smell better, but you're the one that made yourself stink. It's amazing how people think, the wickedness that we try to cover up. Noisome will then lead you to sadness. Sad, remember, meant to be full of what you said you wanted, to the point of disgust, but yet unfulfilled. There just isn't enough alcohol, is there? There's not enough marijuana. There's not enough of anything that you need, because the more you get of it, the more you realize it doesn't satisfy. The more you understand how bad the side effects are, and the sadder you get. So you see, where can we go but to the Lord? I appreciated that song. It's the only thing you can have every day, never get full, but never get disgusted with it either. It's always just right. Has no side effects, by the way. No negative side effects. Now from sad, this is the wickedness again, this individual will go to sorrow. Now understand this, at this point, the only one you're hurting is yourself. But through this is going to come violence. The next definition of the word wickedness is sorrow. And sorrow means to worry in order to be ill. I am convinced, and I've told you before, there's not a sickness on the face of this earth, there's not an illness on the face of this earth that is not preceded by worry. Not a one. So you see, wickedness eventually is going to get you to the point where you're going to start affecting yourself to the point that an organic illness will become a reality. You are now in sorrow, mental suffering. That's what worry is, mental suffering. See, part of you is already sick. You got to be sick in the head before you get sick in the body. So this sorrow, this mental suffering, this worrying about things that are external are what's going to lead you to a physical illness, but you're already mentally sick. That's what sorrow is. Sorrow will lead you to trouble. And if you remember, trouble meant to run with a disorderly crowd. Trouble means to cause mental agitation. Trouble means to cause difficulty or inconvenience, to pester, to annoy, to tease, and to bother. And that would lead you to wretchedness. And wretchedness meant an outcast, one driven out, a miserable, unhappy person. You can always recognize that in any relationship, because when the person gets to that point, they want to be alone. They don't want to talk about the situation. They want to go out and act it out. They feel despised and scorned and unloved. And they feel so sorry for themselves, like they're an outcast and driven out after I've given you the best weeks of my life. But the individual said, but we've lived together for 20 years. Yes, and you've given me the best weeks of your life. Two of them, as a matter of fact. See what the individual is saying? Out of 20 years, we've had two weeks of happiness. I don't care how long you've been together. So you see, this individual now feels as an outcast. Now at this point, they're starting to look for someone to do violence to. Wretchedness will lead to adversity. And adversity means one who's turned opposite to everything. One who is moving or working in a contrary position or a contrary direction. Now this is the individual that no matter what I advise them to do, they're against it. I don't care what you tell such an individual, they're going to be against it. Directly contrary, by the way. Now sometimes people say, well, Reuben, doesn't that discourage you? No, I'm a doctor. And you see, I can recognize these symptoms. So when I see an individual who is moving and working in a contrary direction of everything that he's told or is given, then I know we have someone who's in adversity. I know the stage of wickedness they're in. Why should I take that personal? But you see, you with each other, you do exactly that. In your ego, you really believe that you can affect another's behavior and that you're that important. And I'm here to tell you, you are not. But I'm not here to tell you that to chop down your ego. I'm here to tell you that to release you. You're not responsible for the way that jerk is acting. Or that jerkette, whatever the case is. And because of that, you don't have to defend yourself against what he or she is saying. And because of that, you don't have to attack what he or she is saying. So you see, the first thing I have to do is get somebody to back off this battle that's going on in order to try to get some peace in this relationship. So when I see a person opposite in position and unfavorable and contrary, I know exactly what needs to be done. But the difficulty is not mine. Although I have my own difficulties, this isn't one of them. You are not my problem. And therefore, you are not my solution. Now, I've said this to you many times before. Be careful what you label as the problem in your life. Be extremely careful who you label as the problem in your life. The minute you label your partner, your mate, a friend, relative, circumstances, something that you cannot control, you label them the problem. They have control over the problem. You know what you've done? You've also given them control over the solution. You're now their slave. You can't be right until they're right. You can't be happy till they're happy. You've become a slave. But if you will truthfully label whatever difficulty you're having as being your problem, you're the only one that has the power to change you. So now you've labeled the problem something that you have control over, and that's freedom. But it's also responsibility, which most people don't want. See, if you can label someone else as being the person responsible for your difficulty, not realizing that in doing that you also gave them authority, because responsibility and authority go hand in hand, now you've cut for yourself a lifelong position of being a slave to someone else's whims, their temperament, and their tantrums. And that's no way to live. As a matter of fact, that's wicked. So you see, when you go to God and pray and tell him how bad your partner is, how bad circumstances are, how bad everything is around you, and that's why you're bad, he's looking at you and saying, I've once put a whole flood on the earth because of that, dummy. See, what you're doing is you are going and pleading for wickedness instead of going to the Lord and saying, Lord, all of these things, these circumstances are bad, but my concern is they're affecting me wrong. And I had to have the peace of God in me and not be affected by my circumstances. But you see, that takes some awareness and confession that most people are not willing to make. As a matter of fact, most people are not even aware of that kind of state. The last part of the definition of wickedness is affliction and calamity, which basically defined means deep trouble and disaster. Whenever I run into a couple whose relationship is already in deep trouble and disaster, I know exactly that the work is cut out for me. I know exactly what has to happen. There's only one way to do it. You have to separate them like fighting dogs. And once they get separated and they realize their life is no better apart than it was together, then they understand, I can't blame him or her. I'm just as bad off without her as I was with her. And all of a sudden they start realizing, my God, the preacher knew what he was talking about. It never was her fault. And then she'll come to the same realization, by the way. Or she or you, both of you, will go out and find another one just like the one you just left and do it again. And that's a statement of total ignorance. Because if we really sit down and analyze it, getting rid of that individual didn't solve your problem. Changing jobs did not solve your problem. Changing your circumstances did not solve your problem. Changing your underwear won't solve your problem. Might make you more socially acceptable in genteel circles, but it's not going to solve the problem. There has to be a change in you. And you see, in order for you there to be a change in you, you have to recognize that there's something that needs changing. Now, there aren't a lot of people that are candid enough with themselves to come to the realization that there's wickedness in their lives based on what I've just told you. Most people will still deny it. But I'm going to tell you what it's going to cause. It's going to cause violence. Sometimes, unfortunately, people have to see something before they believe. They have to hear it and see it. And I've told you before why that is. All children are that way. All immature people are that way. Show and tell. You go to any school, the younger the child, the more show and tell there is in the classroom. That's a sign of immaturity. You can't just hear it. You've got to see it as well. Well, for those of you that can't just hear it, I've told you about wickedness. I'm going to share with you now how to see it. You'll find that in verse 13 of chapter 6. It says, "And God said unto Noah, the end of all earth is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth." Now here's the difficulty with this wickedness, these emotional responses, this emotional involvement with your circumstances, this desire that people have to be happy or unhappy or motivated one way or the other, depending on what's going on around them, it's going to bring violence. It says the earth is filled with violence through them. In other words, what this is saying, God is saying there'd be no violence on the earth if there wasn't wickedness. And wickedness is obviously emotionality. So now he says, through this emotionality, we now have an earth that is filled with violence. And you remember what the earth meant. It's not just this globe that we live on. According to the book of Genesis, we are but a handful of dust. We are made of earth. Earth, another word for earth besides globe is dirt. So the dirt, the soil, is filled with violence through wickedness. And we being but a handful of dirt, having all the chemical components of a handful of dirt, for those of you that are chemist majors, your body has all the chemical components of a handful of dirt. So what this is saying, your body is now filled with violence through the wickedness. The word violence means cruelty. It means dealing wrong. It means to maltreat, to imagine wrongfully, and to do violence. This is the physical manifestation of the individual who chooses to think and be affected with emotion. He does violence. Characteristic, classic behavior of a wicked person. The word violence means unjust or callous use of force or power in violating another's rights. That's when we get to the point where we threaten one another with lawyers or whatever. And whatever power we have a tendency to use it in a callous and forceful way in order to violate the rights of another. Your wife doesn't have to do what you tell her. She should, but she doesn't have to. Now, if you speaking the truth to her isn't enough, leave her alone. You have no right to use callous force or the callous use of force or power in violating her rights. Now, I didn't say it was right for her to be that way. I said she has a right to be a jerk. She has a right to be whatever she wants to be. And you do not have the right to use force to try to intimidate her to do elsewhere. And you ought to thank God that God said that. Because God knows you've done some wrong. And God doesn't use force to make you do right, or we'd all be in big trouble. Personally, I would walk around with a perpetual lightning rod welded to my head. But the man doesn't use force. And certainly he has force. I would make sure my underwear was grounded at all times. I wouldn't venture outside the door without that. Except that I know he does not use force or power in violating my right to be right or wrong. What I choose, he's made me free. And if I'm free, then you're free. And if you don't want to believe this, you don't have to. And if you want to, that's fine too. You don't even have to hear it if you don't want to. What you're doing here, if you don't want to hear it, is beyond me, but that's another sermon. But you don't have to. And you see, and I don't have to worry about whether you like it or not. So see, there's no force here, implied or inferred. You're free. There is no violence. There is no attempt to violate your rights to believe whatever you want to believe. As I've said so many times, I don't tell people what to do. I will tell you what you're doing. And that you won't like, but I won't tell you what to do. Because I'm not told what to do. I'm only told what I'm doing. And then I'm given a choice. Sometimes I exercise the right choice, and sometimes, to my shame, I do not. But I always have the right to do one or the other. The word violence also means the twisting of a phrase so as to distort the original or the true sense or the form of what was said. Now, this is the individual, a violent individual, you cannot reason with them because they distort what you say, they distort what they say, they distort everything. So you see, what you say does not retain its original sense or its original form. They'll distort it. And they'll try to make what you said say what they want to say so it'll fit their argument against you. In other words, they're fighting with themselves. And then, on top of that, they'll even distort what they say. They'll say one thing and you say, well, but I didn't mean that. Well, you just distorted what you just said. I like one of the standards that I hear a lot of you using. Well, I was just teasing. No, you were just distorting. See, what you were doing is you were doing violence. You're twisting your own phrase in order to distort the original or the true sense of what you said. And that's called violence. And God said, look, this earth is filled with violence, and that's why I'm going to destroy it. If you remember what the word destroy meant, to erase, to rub you out, to eradicate, not you, now understand this, it's to eradicate from the mind, to blot out from the mind that's motivating you to be wicked. So you see, what God is trying to do, he's trying to get you to repent, think differently. He's not out to zap you with lightning. And he's not out to take away from you the physical things that you've worked so hard to get. God is not a thief. You know, the way some people look at God, when I first learned about him, I thought he was going to hold me up on the street corner with a gun. Seemed like he was always taking things away from people, according to the way that it was preached, and that wasn't true. So this individual who's full of wickedness, emotionality, will immediately turn to violence. He used force and power in order to violate another's rights. They're always scheming one way or the other, where they're stronger than the other individual, in order to violate the other individual's rights. But you see, they don't do it by looking for strength in themselves. They do it by looking for weakness in you. She'll watch you every step, everything you say and do, and the minute she sees a weakness, then she'll compare her weakness, which is stronger than your weakness, because she caught you doing something right, and that's how she'll try to violate your rights. See, women are a little more subtle because men are bigger and stronger, as a rule. It's not necessarily always the case anymore. But you see, what's happening is the individual is looking for a weakness in the other individual so they can look at themselves as being stronger than that person in that area. You haven't changed a bit when you find the weakness in someone else. You know, that's like going to the hospital. You have a sickness and you go to the hospital and walk up and down the cancer ward so that you can feel healthier than everybody else. Well, relatively speaking, you're healthier than everybody else in that ward, but you're no healthier than when you went in. And you won't be any healthier when you came out. You just compared yourself to people that are worse than you. That's why you think you're strong. And that's why you think you're vindicated in your positions against the other individual, because you're looking for their weakness. You're looking for their faults, which incidentally is the job of the devil, to find fault in people. And that isn't bringing you any closer to an awareness of yourself. It's not helping the relationship. It's not helping what you're contributing to the wrongfulness of that relationship. What it's doing is making it worse. Because you see, the more faults you point out in the other individual, as a defense mechanism, without realizing what they're doing, they'll start looking for faults in you. And lo and behold, guess what? You've got faults. And all you have to do is find two faults pressing against one another, and you've got an earthquake. See, everything testifies of the Lord, doesn't it? I can go into any family that you will allow me to go into and let them, they'll both tell me about their faults. I'll tell you when the earthquake's coming and where. Because you see, that's just like the earth that we live on. Everything is consistent. Everything that God ordained, everything has to obey. Even the earth itself is a manifestation of what happens in interpersonal relationships. When the faults start rubbing against each other, pressure builds up and pressure builds up and pressure builds up until finally it's released and everything is shaken and tumbled down and destroyed. That's an earthquake. It's what happens in every relationship. Preoccupation with faults. And you see, all the faults have to do, as long as the fault lines are running with each other, there's no buildup of pressure. It's when they start running and working against one another, they start building up pressure, and sooner or later they got to go this way. It's like this. And they push and push and push until finally something's got to give. That's the two faults, pushing against one another. You did that wrong. You're another one. Look what you did. Push, 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 push. And eventually you're going to have an earthquake. See, this is the kind of violence that God is talking about. And we spend millions of dollars and put seismographs all over in an attempt to predict earthquakes. And they still, what do? They get a chipmunk and the chipmunk goes crazy and says there's an earthquake coming. Chipmunks are cheap. Did you know that? Yet we spend billions of dollars trying to predict earthquakes. And I can tell them why the faults rubbing together. And understand this, isn't it amazing that before people became so fault-oriented toward one another, the incidence of earthquakes on this earth in relation to what it is right now was almost non-existent? Isn't it amazing that the more we fight as a people, the more, right now there's more wars going on this earth than ever in recorded history. Neighbors finding fault with one another. Everybody's fighting. Even in this country, there's more litigation going on. There's more disputes going on, even within countries. And every country is mad at everybody else. And everybody's finding fault with everybody else. Isn't it amazing and or coincidental that at the same incident that we find fault with one another and press against one another, country against country, person against person, friend against friend, do you think it's a coincidence that at the same level, earthquakes physically are multiplying every single year? You see, what God is really trying to say, he says, look around you. You are affecting your environment. We're killing this whole earth. We're polluting it with everything. Why? Because we don't understand how profound the Word of God is and how much of an effect it has on you and vice versa. So now this individual is doing violence. Violence will lead you to the following. Violence means to maltreat. Maltreat basically means to treat roughly and unkindly and to abuse. There's more child abuse going on now than ever that we've ever known about. But there are more young people abusing senior citizens than we've ever seen in our entire history. Everybody's abusing everybody else. You can't watch the news, people abusing animals. Almost weekly you'll see where somebody has a bunch of horses or dogs or something where they're just pitiful the way they're treating them. I saw on TV the other day a mother who had left her 8-year-old child locked in an attic in a cold part of the country And when they found that poor child, they had to amputate both her legs because of frostbite. Now, the mother was nice and comfortable in another house, but she took her to an abandoned house, locked her in the attic. Why? Just to be mean. In order to maltreat her. See, it becomes a possessive kind of thing. And I would suspect that after she realized and came to her senses, which is too late, she realizes what she's done. But she treated that child roughly and unkindly and abused that child. See, what I'm concerned at this point is, are you maltreating? Are you abusing your wife? Wives, are you abusing your husbands? Now, that doesn't just mean that you slap them around. You know, that's part of abuse. But you see, abuse is very close to misuse. And abuse means to use too much or not enough. See, you can become too... Any extreme is wrong. Abuse means an extreme. Misuse means to use wrongly. But abuse means to use too much or not enough. We got a world full of extremists, which is the end result of emotionality, which is wickedness, which leads you to violence. I'm not going to finish this. I'm going to have to. I thought I was going to finish this and start the other phase of it at 11, but it's 11 now, so I'll have to take a few minutes to finish at the 11 o'clock hour, and then we'll get into the other service. Remember, we leave off with maltreat, which is a form of abuse, and it'll ruin relationships. There's no relationship can flourish under wickedness and violence. And it doesn't matter if you end up alone, because then you'll be wicked and violent to you. As a matter of fact, that's the mercy of God, and also it's the judgment of God. You're so into being wicked and violent, the Lord says, well, you love that so much, we'll put you in a situation where you have no one to do that but yourself, and then let's see how you like it. That changes all the atheists, you know that? When people get to that point, they want to counsel then. It's too bad they don't counsel before that. It's too bad they don't listen before that. Too bad they don't understand what they're doing to the other individual. It's unfortunate they don't come to a realization until they're doing that to themselves, and then they know what it feels like and what it's like, and then they want to talk. That's because you love your own body, don't you? And sometimes that's the only thing that'll make people wake up. It could be easier and faster than that, but you'll wake up at that level, believe me. At that point, you'll know what I'm talking about. Brother Don, would you close the services? And God said unto Noah, the end of all earth has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. If you recall, it was because of this wickedness, because of this emotional response to circumstances and people around us, it will cause violence to come through that vehicle. If you remember, we left off with maltreatment as being a form of that violence. And maltreat meant to treat roughly or unkindly and to abuse. The next definition that we go to from there, this violence, so that you can recognize whether you are doing violence, so that you can know if in fact you're a wicked person. So that if you want to do something about it, you can. See, my job is not to show you these things to make you feel bad about yourself. My job is to show you these things so that if you elect willingly to do something about it, you'll know what to do. So you see, it's only putting you in a position of authority and knowledge so that you can make an objective decision based on knowledge and information rather than on emotionality. So this maltreatment will lead you to dealing wrong. This is the characteristic of the violent individual. They deal wrong. The word dealing means the way one acts toward another. The relationships that one has with another. That's your dealings. Now everybody deals with everybody else. But the violent person deals wrong. And wrong means twisted. and not in accordance with the previous arrangement or given intention. The violent person never keeps their word. The violent person will promise you this and promise you that, and then through the course of time, they'll twist their words, twist their intention, until finally it comes out different than what they first told you. They deal wrong with you. This is the individual that says, I love you and I won't be mean anymore, and we'll just do this thing right from now on. And then day by day, it gets twisted and twisted and twisted. Before you know it, you're back, right back to the square one again, because they don't want to be in accordance with the previous arrangement or the given intention. And to deal with the violent person, after a while, they'll keep changing, and you'll start questioning your own ability to understand the spoken word. They'll really start giving you an insecurity about yourself. Did I not understand that right? Is there something wrong with me? No. That individual can't deal anyway but in a twisted way. They can never stay in compliance and accordance with the previous arrangement or the given intention. That's one of the reasons they have such difficulty with counseling, because we try to come up with a solid arrangement, something that we can define that equates to a behavioral change, rather than in these ambiguous words of I'm going to be better. Well, better than what? Well, just better than better. Better than I used to be. Well, how did you used to be? I was good. It was her fault. Well, you see, there's no hope in that kind of a mentality and that kind of an assessment. That individual is dealing wrong. They're twisted. Dealing wrong also means dealing in a way contrary to fact or reason. You see, the individual that deals this way is the individual that wants you to treat them the way they were treated at home when they were wrong. And mothers particularly are notorious for perverting children in their wrong behavior, because you make every conceivable excuse in the name of love to cover this wrong of your child, and you don't understand what you're doing is you're twisting their ability to assess their own behavior. And forever after, they will live in a dream world that's not in accordance with previous arrangement or given intention. Forever after, they'll be looking for someone as twisted as they are, because that's the only way they can be compatible, and even then for a very short duration. Because they've been taught to deal wrong. The last definition of the word wrong means out of order. See, they've been taught to deal out of order. The man did not have the position of authority and respect from the wife, so neither do the children. So right away, you're out of order. Now, I didn't say the man was right. I just said he had a position that doesn't belong to the woman, and vice versa. Now, whatever rightness comes through those individuals depends on two things: their position in relationship to one another and their position in relationship to the truth. So you see, it is not the exclusive domain of the man to be right, but it is the exclusive domain of the man to be the man. So you see, if you stay in order in relationship to one another, at least you won't teach your children a twisted rendition of what the family ought to be like. If the man, in fact, is not in his proper order, and he's dealing in a wrong, twisted fashion, then the children in that family, and listen to me, wives, this is important, the children in that family do not have a good concept of what a man ought to be. But at least if you stay in your position, they'll at least know what a woman ought to be. But what do? You come and jump over into the man's position and try to do that, although he's not doing it properly. I understand that. Now the child doesn't have a role model. In either instance, you've compounded the problem. And sometimes grandmothers like to jump in on the act too. See, they don't like to be left out. And one of these days, because I've just about tromped on everybody's toes, one of these days I'm going to start on grandmothers and grandfathers. You know there's no such thing as a grandmother and a grandfather. Now, if you'll look in the Bible, it'll say the wife or the mother of his mother or the father of his father. Nowhere in the Bible have I found yet, I'm not going to say it's not there, I haven't finished looking. I don't even know why I'm preaching this thing, I'm not ready to yet. But so far I haven't found a grandfather or a grandmother. Because you know what grandfather and grandmother basically mean? Grand means bigger, better, stronger, of better quality than that that follows. In other words, a grandfather is more important than the father. A grandmother is more important than the mother. Now, what that basically means is that you perpetuate the teachings because the father and the mother then don't have the respect and the influence that they have because they have someone who's higher in rank and authority. There is a grandfather and a grandmother. And you see, what that basically does, it gets everything out of order. Now, if grandmothers and grandfathers were proper, then I believe we would have heard about grandmothers and grandfathers, but that terminology does not appear in the Bible. Now, I'm not against the mother of your mother. And I'm not against your father's father. I think we all need them. They're really important people. But these titles and positions that we give them in the name of love, which end up perverting and putting out of order the relationship this child is growing up in and doesn't know who's in charge. Doesn't know what to believe or who to believe or when. And then to compound the problem, fathers and mothers and grandfathers and grandmothers on both sides never agree. So you see, this child is now growing up in a twisted environment where the father is supposed to be the ultimate authority, followed sequentially by the mother, but then they have these people that are grand such and such. And the grandfather and the grandmother on the father's side are always with the father, and the grandmother and the grandfather on the other side are always with the mother. So all these conflicting, twisted kinds of ways of looking at the same situation confuse the child. After a while, they don't see anything as being orderly. They don't see a concise way of doing anything. We raise our children to be politicians. So when they're with this set of grandparents, this is the mode of behavior. When they're with this set of grandparents, this is the mode of behavior. When they're with the parents, then it's some conglomeration of the two. And then you bring them to church and you set them with a whole different standard because you don't want everybody else to know what they've really been taught, so you've got another set of orders for them here. And these kids are saying, what is wrong with these big people? Don't they know what they're talking about? You see, children are really very obedient children. It's the obedience of the children is not the problem. It's the orders that they're getting that is the problem. Conflicting orders. Twisted. You deal wrong with your children. Why? Because you've been dealt wrong with. Everything is twisted, not in accordance with previous arrangement, out of order, contrary to fact or reason. I have never found a grandparent yet who was truthful even about the looks of their grandchild, much less their behavior. Personally, I think they're all ugly. And the reason I think they're ugly is they look just like you. But you see, to the individual, there's nothing wrong with them. They have to twist everything. And what amazes me, and grandparents are particularly this way, because you see, when they get to a certain age, they say, well, I can't handle kids anymore. And that just makes me nervous. So you see, they get so legalistic with everybody else except their own. Now, it amazes me, their own grandchildren are exceeded in obnoxiousness only by their own children. And that, I mean, they walk around with a gas mask. They can't smell that one at all. That's twisted. That's dealing wrong. But that's also violence. And why did it come? Because of wickedness? Why? Because you're emotionally involved with those people, and you cannot and will not see their wrong, but those people that you're being objective to about what you should be with everybody, you can sure see them. Something wrong with that. And you see, that child in that kind of environment will go to school and won't get her head licked every day by the teacher and everybody else. She'll be told when she's right and wrong. That child naturally will gravitate to those individuals who always say they're right. And you think it's love. And I'm telling you, it's a twisted relationship. You're dealing wrong. It's out of order. I'm going to say something to all the grandmothers and all the grandfathers in here. It's time to abdicate your position. You see, you've raised them already. You've given them everything you can give. Let them raise their children. You are the father of their father. You are not their father. You're not the father of those children. You're the father of their father. You're not the mother of those children. You're the mother of their mother. Quit confusing the kids. And quit confusing the people in the relationships who are trying to somehow juggle this enormous amount of confusion. Because of violence. Because of Mother's Day and Father's Day. Which I don't put any closer or any more important than Groundhog Day. Is that because I'm against mothers and fathers? No, I'm against Mother's Day and Father's Day. Well, why are you against Mother's Day and Father's Day? Because I think you ought to treat them with respect and love every day. It does not suffice to become mother and father oriented one time out of the year and escape 363 days of or 64 days of responsibility by sending your card and your gift one day. Personally, I'd rather not have a card for mine. If they can't treat me with respect and honor me every day as the father, then I don't want their card once a year. It's hollow. It rings hollow. And it's something I'm not willing to settle for. I want it all, or I don't want it at all. So you see, this dealing wrong, this violence, is basically being out of order. Now, if marriage counselors would learn this out of the book, and lawyers would learn this out of the book, they'd be out of business. That's why it doesn't pay them to know this. You pay them not to know this. And you can come to a place like this and get it free. You're twisted. You're not in accordance with a given intention. You're not in accordance with fact or reason. You're out of order. But rather than deny the state that you're in, it'd be smarter to recognize the state that you're in and alter it. Do something about it. Out of order means not in proper sequence and not in proper position, and it also means not in accordance with the rules. Now, the God of this universe is the one that made the proper sequence. I'm not here to argue with anyone whether men ought to be in charge or women ought to be in charge or they ought to be equal. That's not my thing. I'm here to tell you the Bible set the sequence, and that's what I believe. Now, the propriety of that, the advisability of that, and the acceptability of that is your business. I'm not trying to make your decision, but I can make a good argument for the Bible saying this is the proper sequence. I'll debate this with anybody. Whether it's right for you, whether you want it and willing to accept it, is none of my business. You're a free moral agent. Do whatever you like. But at least having heard this, you'll have another alternative. But I'm not going to try to tell you you need to or you have to, because you certainly do not. Evidenced by the fact that you haven't. And you're not any curlier than you were before. There's no lightnings that strike you. But you see, this violence will ultimately take you to cruelty. This is the way the violent person ends up. cruel. Two words on this manifestation. Cruel comes from the word crude. A cruel person is always a crude person, and a crude person is always a cruel person. And the reason they are is because they're wicked. Now, there are some people in this room that are down flat cruel. And most of you, if not all of you sitting in this room, would say, well, that certainly cannot mean me. Give me 5 minutes and we'll see. The word cruel basically means, the basic sense of the word cruel means to enjoy the suffering of others. This is the individual, and we could say, well, does that mean like in the concentration camps where we had people that just enjoyed the suffering as people were being gassed? Yeah, that was cruel. That's a form of cruelty. Well, thank God, I certainly wouldn't enjoy that. Come on. You enjoy the suffering of others as the world turns. Who's going to do what today? And you sit there glued and just mesmerized by the suffering of others. And the most popular shows are the ones that have the most suffering because you're cruel. You enjoy watching that garbage. That's your cruelty. You enjoy the suffering of others. And then you'll get on the phone and say, do you know what John did to Jane? And then you'll succeed in telling them exactly what you enjoyed seeing. Now you got to pass it on. You enjoy the suffering of others. Or maybe you're not, of course, well, I don't watch much of that stuff. Well, maybe you're into tear-jerking books. The most popular ones are the ones that have the most suffering, the worst individuals, the most abominable kind of situations, but then they always end up making up, and they get this high emotional where they make up after they have killed each other. You enjoy, you're cruel. You enjoy the suffering of others. That's violence. Maybe what you enjoy is watching people in movies and TV shoot each other's heads off and stuff. You enjoy the suffering of others. More blood and guts, the better. They're the most popular shows, aren't they? That's violence. That's enjoying the suffering of others. Now, it doesn't matter how subtle it becomes, whether you're enjoying it vicariously or right on the spot. It's still cruelty. And it's still violence, and it still comes because of wickedness. And it's still going to have the same ultimate effect. It's going to cause you to be cruel. Now, these individuals that enjoy the suffering of others, be careful now. You might think that's innocent. But the cruel person, the one who enjoys watching others suffering, is without mercy. See, you don't watch the shows where there's no suffering. They're not any fun. They're not even popular. So the person who enjoys the suffering of others is one who is without mercy. Now, what does that mean? Why is a person without mercy? Why do they enjoy the suffering of others? Because, you see, they're not willing to admit their own sin. They're not willing to admit their own faults. They're not willing to listen to this preacher or any preacher tell them what's wrong with them. So, therefore, they are without fault. They have nothing to confess. So, therefore, they don't need to ask for mercy because they're wrong. They haven't asked for mercy. They haven't received any. So, they are without mercy. So, what happens when someone crosses them up? They are without mercy. See, you cannot, when you're around a cruel person, one who is without mercy, the only way that you can ever deal with them is to be absolutely perfect. Now, you can forget that. And you see, the reason they have no mercy for you and your faults is because they have no mercy for their faults because they don't think they have any faults. So you see, this individual who's constantly looking for a way to vent their anger and their frustration at everybody around them is the individual who lacks mercy. And he lacks or she lacks mercy because they're not willing to deal with what's wrong with them. Because once you come to an awareness of what your fault is, you'll understand you can't pay for it. The only thing you can hope for is the mercy of God, the forgiveness of God, based on what Jesus Christ did at the cross, not what you did. My God in heaven put you on the cross, you'd have wimped all over the place. I hear how you talk and how you act, and you're nowhere near the cross. Some of you have shrunk some of my suits the way you carry on. You lose control of all your openings. You snot and tear and everything else. I mean, it just flows. Can you imagine yourself on the cross? There's no way. You're a cruel person. You're without mercy. But you see, the statement that I'm making is not, don't get hung up on the fact that I've said you are without mercy because you won't forgive people. You have to be angry with them. You have to point out their faults. That's the physical manifestation. That's the symptom. That's not what concerns me. What concerns me is not so much that you have no mercy to give or that you won't give any mercy. What concerns me is that you have none. And what concerns me beyond that is why you don't have mercy. And the reason you don't have mercy is that you don't see that you have any faults. There's nothing wrong with you. And let me tell you about the individual who is cruel in this way, without mercy, and who enjoys the suffering of others. The basic root word of the word cruel is to be crude. Crude means in a raw or natural condition before being prepared for use. Raw, natural. That's what they like. They like in their TV shows and their movies, they like it raw. And then the things that they read, they like it raw because they're crude. They're raw. They're undone. They're not prepared for use. And the last part of the definition of the word crude, which will lead you to cruel, which will lead you to dealing wrong and maltreatment and violence, which comes from wickedness, the word for crude is immature. Now, an immature man or woman will always be crude because that's what it means. The immature man and woman, just by virtue of the fact that they're immature, they're crude, that makes them cruel. That causes them to deal in a twisted fashion, which causes them to maltreat themselves and everybody around them and do violence. So you see, you cannot help that individual or alter their behavior by acquiescing or giving in to what their little whims. Their basic problem is they're immature. You married a child. You married someone who is immature. They're still acting like they did as a child. And as a child, they got to cuss and fuss and muss at mom, and mom said, oh, you lovely little thing, you just must be having a headache. Who did this to you to cause you to act this way, sweetheart? Well, you see, that's the way they were treated when they were very young and physically immature, as well as mentally. Well, they've grown up in that kind of environment. They're still immature. And because they're immature, they demand that you treat their immaturity the same way mom and dad did, and grandmother and grandfather did. So you see, now you're locked in, and you're married to your son. And he's married to his mother. Or we could reverse it. She's married to her father, and he's married to his daughter. Because you see, there's immaturity there. Now, the minute you become aware of that, I'm going to tell you the next phase of it. It is impossible to have a physical, intimate relationship with your own son. It is impossible for you to have a physical, intimate relationship with your own daughter. And once you start giving in to that immature behavior and coddling that behavior that your partner manifested as a child, and now you as a husband don't see the wisdom of this, and you start giving in to that, after a while she's going to start looking at you as a dad. And you'll start looking at her as your daughter. And the physical relationship just doesn't seem to be right anymore. It's a wrong relationship. It's become twisted. And you erroneously will think, well, maybe he doesn't love me anymore. Or maybe I don't love him anymore. No, that's not the problem. The problem is you cannot be intimate with your dad. Now, sometimes it is because the husband is trying to coddle the wife, and sometimes it is because he's not. And she wants to be still treated like a child. She wants you to set up the same scenario, the same circumstances, so that she can feel good about herself like she did as a child. And if you won't do that, you don't love her. But if you do that, she can't love you. So you see, men, how can you win in a situation? You cannot. The only thing you can do is choose how the marriage is going to end and what it's going to end over. It's going to end because she doesn't think you love her because you won't coddle her. Or it'll end because she ceases to love you because she can't love in that fashion her own father. But either way, you're done. You're dead meat either way. I'm offering you the only solution to this thing. And that is you have to deal with that immature individual and you have to help them to grow up. And in that fashion, the only way you can do it is make sure that you're not the immature one. Make sure you're not half of that. See, this immaturity, this dealing with one another, this desire, this need, this obsession to be dealt with in the fashion that you were dealt with as a child is going to ruin your relationship. And then you'll be forever attracted to father images or mother images, depending on which side of the spectrum that you're on. And then you'll find to your dismay and to your disgust and to your astonishment that no matter how many times you marry, no matter how many times you fall in love with people, it always ends up the same way. It always ends up in that same twisted, immature kind of relationship when the only thing that's to be decided is, why are we not going to make it? The issue is whether we're going to make it was never an issue. Why? Because of immaturity, because of wickedness, and because of violence. And the Lord is saying, because of this, this violence comes through wickedness. And the word through means by way of and by means of and as a result of. In other words, violence comes into the relationship as a result of wickedness. Immaturity, maltreatment, abusing kinds of actions, a twisted kind of way of dealing comes as a result of wickedness, which is displeasure and all those other emotional responses that we talked about. So you see, a relationship like that cannot sustain. A relationship like that not only cannot sustain itself, it can't teach the children anything but wrong. And what it does, it perverts everything and everybody. And there is no hope. There's no way out. There's no way you can change. There's nothing you can do about it. And having learned that, we'll say, well, what's the answer? Go back to verse 8, and I'll tell you very simply what the answer is. For those of you that have heard this before, it'll be somewhat of a review, but if you've heard it before, you're going to hear it again because both of your minds have to hear this. Verse 8 of chapter 6 says, in all of this frustration and all the things that we've talked about, here's the only hope. It says, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Well, what's different about Noah? God is no respecter of persons. Why did Noah find grace? Why was Noah even looking for grace? Well, because Noah is Noah. Remember, the name that a person has, and especially in this instance, it's indicative of their character and their authority. That's how names are given. Well, the word Noah means rest. It means to be quiet, to be rested, and settle down. That's a far cry from displeasure and sorrow and distress and all the wickedness that was going on with everybody else. The man just said, hey, things are rotten and God is good and I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to blame everybody else for what's going on. I'm going to be at peace. And God said, wow. I've just threatened to undo the whole earth and give everybody a free membership at the Y, perpetual membership at the Y. Noah, how do you feel?
Hey,
you said if we trusted in you, nothing could happen. But I'm going to flood the whole earth. Flood away. I still trust you. But what if you die? I'm going to heaven then. Well, don't you understand how bad things can get? No. Well, aren't you displeasured? No. Well, what are you? Rest. Quiet. Flood's coming. So? See, this man had rest. Now, was he any better or any worse? No, he was just different. The circumstances for him on this earth at that time were identical to everybody else's. But everybody else was reacting in displeasure and distress and sorrow and trouble and all those things. And how did Noah react to rest, quiet, and settle down? Same circumstances, same earth, same everything, different reaction. So you see, that's all I'm asking you to consider is, regardless of what's going on, be a Noah. Stay rested, stay quiet, stay peaceful. His word is true. He said, you're going to make out on this. He said, it's going to turn out right. But Reuben, you don't understand what's going on. Thank God I don't. See, Noah had rest. And rest means peace of mind. But he lived on the same earth and looked at the same circumstances everybody else looked at. But he had peace of mind. Rest means mental and emotional calm, in spite of the fact that he was seeing what everybody else was seeing. Rest means to be at ease or at peace, tranquil, and to be at rest from the battle. Well, some would say, well, the man must have been retarded or something. Now, how could you be peaceful in spite of looking at all those circumstances? Are we supposed to give up our awareness? I never said that. You need peace. Well, what does the word peace mean? Peace means to confirm an agreement or a treaty in order to end the war. Now, in this church, I have been offering you now for several years a treaty and an agreement called the Bible, the Word of God. And all I've suggested to you, if you will confirm what you've heard and read it for yourself, it'll give you peace. That ends the war. In other words, if we could synopsize this whole thing, all God is asking you to do is believe Him. And you say, but that's so hard. Well, I say, well, let's look at your life and how long you've been believing you. Look at the results of that. You would think it would be hard to continue to believe you. Peace means freedom from disturbance or disorder. This is what comes from confirming the agreement. This is what comes from just believing what the Word says. Freedom from disagreement or quarrel. Big difference from the wickedness and the maltreatment and the twisted relationships. This is freedom from disagreement and freedom from quarrel. Peace also means harmony and an undisturbed state of mind. The absence of mental conflict and quiet. Well, this rested, peaceful state of mind, Noah, which is what that means, found grace. The peaceful state of mind found grace. Well, what does the word found mean? It means to cause to come on. So a restful, peaceful state of mind causes grace to come on. In other words, as long as you're worried about your circumstances, as long as you're finding fault with people around you, as long as you're trying to blame and protect yourself and defend and attack and all these things, grace will never come on. You won't find grace. Because it doesn't come to that frame of mind. Even if it visits a bit, you can't deal with it because you don't have a peaceful mind. And it's important for you to find grace, because grace means kindness and favor and pleasantness. And it also means to bend or stoop in kindness to an inferior. In other words, God said, I will bend and stoop. I'll make allowances for your sin. I'll make allowances for your weaknesses. I'll make allowances for your inferiority through grace, which will come because you have a peaceful mind, which comes because you believe what I said and not what you're seeing around you. That's what causes grace to come on. And grace has a lot of benefits. It means favor. And favor means unfair partiality. And that's why I can stand before you, a Christian saved by grace, who's still a sinner, who's enjoying unfair partiality from God. Because I've told him I'm no good, I'm still doing this, I'm still doing that, it's wrong, and I'm not making any bones about it. And I need grace. Well, aren't you worried about that wrong that you're doing? No. Well, why not? I know it's wrong, but I know your word said that once I'm saved, nothing takes me out of your hand. Your word says that all things will work together for my good, so even that wrong that I'm doing ultimately is going to work for my good. And I'm not going to make excuses for it. And I'm certainly not going to find fault in other people and criticize them for the wrong that I'm doing. I'm going to give them mercy and grace too. The Lord says, man, you're going to be a hard man to deal with. You know that? I guess I'm going to have to give you some unfair partiality. So you see, the self-righteous individual is the one that'll say, well, I deserve that because I'm a preacher. I deserve this because I read the Bible. I deserve this because I don't do this or I do that. No, I deserve nothing. I have unfair partiality. I'm blessed by God. Why? Because I'm receiving unfair partiality. Why am I receiving unfair partiality? Because I enjoy grace. Why do I enjoy grace? Because I've caused it to come on. How did I do that? By confirming the agreement, agreeing with this instead of what my eyes told me, and being at peace according to the word instead of what you think of me. I've said this to you before. I don't care what you believe of me, and I don't care what you accuse me of. The truth is worse. I know more about me than you'll ever know, and I'm still here. So if the little bit that you know about me doesn't condemn me, and everything that I know about me doesn't condemn me, why should I worry about anything? The fact of the matter is that this grace is caused by peace of mind. This unfair partiality that we all need only comes by peace of mind. And this peace of mind will never, ever be a reality in your life until you can learn to believe the truth, this book, without proof first. It will come, but the belief has to come first. The peace of mind has to come before the circumstances change. Now, I'm here to promise you, your circumstances will change. I don't care what you need. I don't care what you're lacking. I don't care what you're looking for. It will come as soon as you believe it first. And get peaceful in the process. But as long as you're gritting your teeth and suffering for the Lord until he comes and brings you what he promised, you got a long wait. Because you see, there's no Noah in you. There's no peace of mind. And understand one last thing, and I'll finish this up tonight. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Well, what does that mean? Well, the word eyes from the Greek means an eye, singular. So it doesn't mean his physical eyes. It means Noah found grace in the eye of the Lord. What does the eye mean? In the sight of the Lord. What does sight mean? The outward appearance, the resemblance. In other words, you will find grace when you resemble God. When you have the outward appearance of God. When to the sight you look and act like God. See, you all try to look inside of me to see, what does he believe? What does he really think? What's he really doing? I'm glad God doesn't do that. He looks on the outside and he says, how you doing, Reva? I'm cool, Lord. Oh, I'm so happy. Thank you. This is all true and everything's going great. Yeah, you're looking good, man. Well, aren't you worried about, there's some people not in church this morning. And brother such and such called the other night and he said he wasn't too happy with you. Don't bother me none. Well, how about that guy come and broke your window in your van the other night? What window? Windows are a dime a dozen. Are you going to replace that window? I haven't decided, Lord. I just may ask you for another van. Man, you resemble God. But you see, the one that can look inside doesn't. Because he said, you told me you were trusting in the shed blood of Christ. I don't need to look inside of you anymore. You just act like you should. Act like my son. Act like you have a king for a father. Act like you can appeal to the person that owns everything anytime and nobody can touch you. Why don't you act like that? And you see, if God says, boy, you look like my son, you're acting like my son, then the devil comes along and says, better watch that guy, he's acting like God. And then some people come along, who does he think he is? He's acting like God. You got it. That's exactly right. You think God walks around judging people and zapping with lightning and saying, I'm perfect and you're not. No, God is cool. God is not flustered by anything. He's got everything under control. And he says, now you have, in my sight, you have found grace. Sight means, besides the obvious, it means a mental view. It says, you have the same mental view that God has. You see in this book that everything, we win. If you go to Revelation, we win. Well, some of you are waiting till you get there. And I said, look, we already won, dummy. It happened 2,000 years ago. But instead, you act like your God is your husband. If he doesn't act right, you don't. You act like your God is your wife. If she doesn't act right, you don't. You act like your God is your child. If they don't act right, you don't. You act like your God is your parents. If they're not happy with what you're doing, then you're not happy with what you're doing. You got the wrong God. You don't resemble God. You resemble an immature child that's still trying to please their parents by acting in a certain way. And that's wrong. He says, you need to find grace in the sight of the Lord. Sight means a mental view and an opinion. I have the same opinion of God that God has. Now, God said he's perfect. I agree. And God said that in Christ I'm perfect. And I agree with that too. Now, some of you have problems with that. But let me straighten it out so that you won't misunderstand it. In Christ Jesus, I'm perfect. And as far as whatever you can see, I'm perfect. And you can't see inside of me. You can't figure out what's going on inside of me. Well, how do you know that? You can't even figure out.